Hey, next on Ham Nation, it's Halloween. So, you know, we dressed up a little bit. And we're also going to tell you about all kinds of cool stuff, including the ultimate to-go station in an RV by a guy who is becoming a full-time RVer. A whole lot more stuff, too, including amateur radio newsline, a solar report from Dr. T, smoke and solder, and all kinds of other cool stuff. That's coming up next on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 374 for October 31st, 2018, the Halloween extravaganza.
Hello, everyone. Yes, it's K9EID, Bob Heil, but it's Halloween, and I have all of our buddies here. We got Catman up there in the corner. That's Mr. NOA. How you doing, Gordo?
Meow, meow.
All right, and down in the corner we got Don. Don, what are you up to?
Many things.
My
Some
goodness.
Of which we can maybe even talk about.
Okay, we will. And George, how are you doing? You've been on a big spree today, fixing things, I guess. Good to see you.
Well, I have, Bob, and I've lost my voice, but I'm going to do my ventriloquism act tonight, and we'll see how it goes. By the way, in case you're wondering, my costume here, I bet nobody can guess what I am.
Looks like something you see at a Lions Club convention.
Or a ham fest.
Or a ham fest, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, you going to tell us?
Oh, I'm a ham.
You're a ham.
We should have known that.
We missed that one totally. We missed it totally.
I couldn't find my handy talkie mic. I don't know where it is.
Yeah.
Remind me to up your meds, will you?
That would have nailed it.
Yeah, remind me to up your medications.
All right.
Well, what I'm... wearing tonight is, I should have asked Sarah. Her dad was a Lee salesman for Lee Riders, and he was my father's sales rep. My father and mother had a men's clothing store in Marissa back in the 1950 and on, and this was an outfit that was made by Lee for him, and they would do promotions, and he would go into stores and wear his rodeo clown outfit, and it's still intact. It fits me. Of course, I'm about the same size as her dad now, and pockets and all that. It's a real Lee project here, but it's huge, and I think it was apropos. Sarah got it all out last night, and here we are, and so we're going to have fun tonight. That's for sure. Well, I got to tell you, don't miss this. Dennis is coming on, and he has built what I think is the ultimate to-go kit, and he's going to show us what he did, and he'll be in here in just another few segments, so don't go away. You want to see this. It's really exceptional. He did a great job, and I think everything else is going. I think you went to the transmitter, George, and... I don't know what you were doing. I guess we shouldn't talk about it, Don, but you were having fun, whatever you did. But let's see what's going on with Gordo. I know he's got some things. So away we go, WC6NOA.
All right. Thanks, Bob. And hi to the chat room and hi to listeners and viewers. It's Gordo with the good, the bad, and the scary. So, Victor, if you'll take the light cue, here's the good. Ham radio is still continuing to be number one when it comes to emergency communications. And now we have pretty ladies to go along with even more ham radio pretty ladies. And Dr. Scobe, we're just delighted to have you as a licensed ham radio operator. Now, up at Pacificon, Chip Margelli and Janet Margelli were the ones that helped me make that early morning roast. They are the good, the great. And that's what ham radio is all about. Now the bad. You know, you've got to make sure that you have good wiring in your home. And we took a look and, yeah, this could very easily start something that would end up looking like this. So New Year's resolution a little bit early, and that is clean up that wiring shack. And keep your eye on the weather, because this looks like scary weather. That's, yeah, it's scary. We had a little wind here a few weeks ago in Southern Cal. But it's a great way to have your antenna go from horizontal to vertical. And here's a great way to ground mount your antenna, and that is depending just on aluminum and those guidelines. So something to think about. They say that if your antenna didn't blow down in the big wind, it wasn't high enough. Well, to make sure it was high enough, yep, back in 2004, a big crunch. Susie says, what was that? And I said, I'd hate to look. Next morning, yep, you guessed it. The Gordo array went down. And, you know, I have no idea how it happened, but I did have the tallest tower. Analog to digital. Yeah, we know that. Well, it came to TV, but that was actually good for the amateur television network, ATN.org. You can tune them in. And now we've converted all those analog TVs to digital. And next time you're doing FT8, make sure that when you leave the room, the cat does not accidentally warm up its bottom, because what's inside your transceiver are these little transistors that are about $80 a piece, and even more to change them. And now the scary. That's Don Arnold, W6GPS. Don's always out there. And Don says, super scary is to have those drivers that are not watching the road, but rather looking at their gear down below, or those other drivers driving off the road looking at, what the heck is that antenna or what on the back of your motor vehicle? Or me and Sue's headed toward field day in the dune buggy. You got to watch what you're doing. And for those of you that take beginners up to the repeater site, be sure and tell them, don't turn the screws. Oh, I turned them all in because I thought they were loose. No, that's the tuning cavity. Now we really get to the scary. And for Halloween, the scary very well could include this shot, where only support guy lines are keeping that guy without a belt, without a hard hat, without safety glasses up on the tower. I sure hope he knows who his friends are and that you don't have an earthquake. And, you know, we have earthquakes in Southern California. Yes, the one we had a few weeks ago, not too bad, maybe a lawn chair or two. Well, this was the ugly when FCC Laura Smith, FCC lawyer Laura Smith, said that for emergency response agencies, they cannot have a ham work the radio, because that would be illegal, even though it's to save lives. So for that few weeks, we had to have all of our radio folks that took part in emergency comms go QRT. Well, here's Chip and Gordo and I and Susan, Jan, and all the gang down at the beach, because we're going to be there this coming November for Thanksgiving, Beach Mobile. And everything goes well until the cops come and want to know, what is all that aluminum? So a little bit of the ugly. Now, speaking of the scary, we've looked at a lot of coaxial cable connections. And here's a look at tuners. And you're going to be hearing a lot more about automatic tuners. But you got to solder this. That's the single wire coming off of a tuner. And you got to look under the black tape. I won't even show you. Well, I guess I will. Notice how the braid was making contact to the barrel of that connector, not through the holes, but just there. And of course, if you've got the Cushcraft A3 or A4, it's a great great product. But if this is loose, this is the good, the bad, and the ugly, tighten it up because you'll have an intermittent signal. And I love this Field Day, a 160-meter antenna, a balloon tethered to it. We used up two full tanks of the blue stuff. I think that's oxygen and green, but the blue tanks of helium. And up went the balloon. There was no one holding on to the 160-meter, 175-foot wire. So it was gone. So always have a plan, and that'll make you a good ham radio operator. And that is, make sure you have your safety officer, because the new types of coaxial cable, 9913, and all of the LMRs, sometimes they don't settle right into the grass. And early in the morning, those things can happen, even on Halloween. And you never know who's going to be out there lurking at a ham fest. This guy scared the bejesus out of me. And once he uncapped, then he was even more scary. Hi, Ray Novak with ICOM America doing a scare tactic. And speaking of scary things happening, new hams never hit the porta potties at a ham fest with a hand held on your trousers because Yep. Well, we got it back, I'm happy to say, with a magnet. Next shot, Victor, before I throw up. Coaxial cable, this came from Tracy. Tracy had some coax that he ran, and I'm not sure how much power he was running, but that's the center cable sections, the center conductors, and the center conductors beginning to migrate, and bango! Guess what happens now? The coaxial cable is shorted out. So he claims he was not running power. That's the way the coax came, and that's a true story. So the good, the bad, the ugly for Halloween. Remember, there's always a telltale trail of destruction. Your evidence is circumstantial, and your lamp was hideous. And finally, the final shot is, and this is a sincerity on my part, make sure that none of your pets eat any of the candy that is going out to the trick-and-treaters, because candy's not good for them. You need to eat it yourself. And the next morning, you'll take a lead from your dog. Yeah, those things happen. No, he's not upset. He's just having a little porta potty lick for some beverage. But that's what makes ham radio fun. So we hope all of you will have a great Halloween night, what's left of it. Here in Southern California, the goblins are already coming out. So what can I say? Well, I'll tell you what I can say. Happy Halloween. And let's go over to George and see what he has to say. George?
Well, happy Halloween, Gordo, and great short shots tonight for the festivities. Well, I've got one final chance for you to win a radio from ICOM this month. Tell you how to win it in just a moment.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants, and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to iComAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for new radio. For October, that's going to be the ICOM IC2738 dual band, dual watch, analog transceiver. It does 50 watts on both VHF and UHF, has a large high contrast LCD display, built-in weather alert function. It's very easy to operate, and there's an optional Bluetooth board available. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this episode, the last episode of the month, and register to win. And also after every episode, you can enter after each episode of Ham Nation. So get your name in the hat, and we'll let you know next week who won that radio. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's the doctor of love, Don Wilbanks.
Things. Thank you very much. Doctor of shortwave radio. Say hello to our friends over at WTWW 5085 and 15.810. They've got some special programming, special Halloween programming tonight after Ham Nation. The guest will be Dr. Gene Scott, extremely fascinating man, telling you about all kinds of metaphysical and Halloweenish type things. I think you'll seriously enjoy it. So when we're through here, go and check that out on WTWW 5085. We don't have Dr. T via video tonight, but I do have some solar update information from her, and we will tell you all about that right after this from Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2139, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. In the Republic of Chad, Ken Opskar, LA7GIA, has been released following his detention while on de-expedition there.
Ken was barely one day into his operation as a single operator, TT8KO, from the 31st Most Wanted DX entity when local police ordered him to cease operations on October 10th, pending an equipment inspection by the head of police himself. His detention in Chad went well past his scheduled end of operations on October 21st. He told Amateur Radio Newsline in an email on October 23rd that the Norwegian embassy had stepped in to talk to local officials. Meanwhile, he was safe and comfortable in his hotel, posting updates on the DX World website to reassure the amateur community that their emailed wishes were bringing him good cheer. By his earlier account, police had found all of his documents to be in order, but his detention continued. Ken's earlier post on the website said he believed the Chad's telecommunication regulator, ARCEP, had failed to inform local police of his plan to operate a de-expedition. As such, his gear has been disconnected and he had no further access to his radios or antennas. According to his online log, Ken had made 2,135 QSOs in CW during his one day on the air. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
Newsline's Stephen Kenford, N8WB, has an update on Hurricane Michael relief efforts.
As the Florida Panhandle continues to piece lives and communications back together after Hurricane Michael slammed into the northern part of the state, hams assisting the northern Florida section of Aries have returned home after 2 weeks in the field, working five-day rotations. Section Emergency Coordinator Carl Martin, KG4HBN, told Amateur Radio Newsline that the Florida Department of Emergency Management covered communications from shelters to county and state emergency operations centers. The hams relied mostly on HF, using 80 meters and 40 meters, relying on SARnet, the statewide amateur radio network of UHF-linked voice repeaters, as backup for handling traffic and other communications. Carl said that for 2 weeks, there were more than 50 operators either deployed or handling traffic and serving as net control at stations outside the affected areas. Efforts focused on the counties of Bay, Gulf, Calhoun, Jackson, Library, and Gadsden, all of which were heavily hit. In the meantime, Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker went on social media to formally recognize all hams' contributions in the disaster response effort.
More than a dozen YL spent a recent weekend on a dry-docked submarine in Oklahoma calling QRZ.
There's nothing like calling QRZ from a dry-docked submarine in Oklahoma to make for a successful weekend. A group of 14 YLs from Kansas, Texas, and Oklahoma climbed aboard the USS Batfish in Muskogee, where they operated on the HF bands for 3 days, beginning October 12th, and even slept on board as guests of the USS Batfish Radio Club, WW2SUB. With the help of the club's host, Wade Harris, KF5IF, they hung antennas and made use of the club's portable tower and one of its 3 radio systems, and even set up satellite systems. According to a post on the South Canadian Amateur Radio website, the submarine experience marked the first time some of the YLs got on the HF bands. By the end of the weekend, the team had logged 350 contacts while honoring 2 lost subs, the USS Wahoo and the USS Dorado. One highlight of the YL's experience, however, was something perhaps a bit more terrestrial. Virginia NV5F played her bagpipes for the team. According to Mark Klein, N5HZR, the YLs are ready to take another dive on the submarine next October, but meanwhile are looking for a similar site for a weekend operation in Dallas, Texas. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for 4 decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Ed Durant, DD5LP, Stephen Kinford, NAWB, Jim Dameron, NATMW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And while Dr. T is out trick-or-treating with her daughter tonight, I'll fill you in on what's going on with the solar update. Your solar storm and aurora 5-day outlook, a large coronal hole will be rotating into the Earth's strike zone in a few days. We should have slides of this, Victor, in the Dropbox. If not, that's just fine. We'll be sending some of that fast solar wind our way. This could bump us up to storm conditions by November 3rd. Aurora will be possible down to the middle latitudes through the weekend. Expect ham radio issues, especially on Earth's night side, along with auroral propagation. GPS reception will also suffer at high latitudes in areas where the aurora is active and near the gray line. Expect things to begin calming down, however, by mid-next week. And looking at the solar flare and particle radiation outlook, we still have a spotless sun, and as such, the solar flux levels continue to drag down into the 60s. It's great news for GPS reception, but not so good for amateur radio propagation on the Earth's day side. The coming solar storm may boost propagation intermittently on the day side once it hits, but the effects will weaken as we enter next week. Frequent flyers, such as air crew, as well as prenatal passengers, continue to be at marginal levels for radiation doses during high latitudes and high altitude airline flights. And of course, as always, you need to follow Dr. Tamitha Scove on Twitter and Periscope. She pops up just about all the time at Tamitha Scove. There is her Twitter feed right there. And of course, check out spaceweatherwoman.com. Well worth your time. If you don't subscribe to her on Twitter, if you only subscribe to one person on Twitter, she's the one to subscribe to. Good stuff. All right, over to Bob. We've got a we got a special guest tonight, Dennis KC9ICA, talking about the ultimate to-go station. Bob.
All right, thanks, Don. Boy, good stuff tonight. I want to make a little update for everybody. Listen up, all you chat room guys. Just a minute. I got really good news for you. We have missed Dale for most of the year. And Dale has been doing fine. He's had a few little health issues. Talked to him today. He's fine. He'll be coming back. He'll be back next week. And he'll grow back into the show. But he's had some health. Nothing that's life-threatening, I don't believe. But he sounded good. And he did tell me he misses everybody because he really was a big part of the show. So here is your instructions. Send some videos. He's looking for videos. And all you do, if you remember, is send them to hamnationvideos.com. And that way you'll get those videos into his inbox and he'll start putting them together. But we will see him here with some videos next week. And I really appreciate him hanging in there for us. And We're with you, Dale. Very, very good. Well, let's have Dennis come in and tell us a little bit about this great project. I really appreciate you spending time, Dennis. So give us a little bit of a history of why you did what you did and so on, and then we'll look at some slides of what you have of it.
Okay. Thank you for having me on here tonight, Bob, and happy to be here. My wife and I plan on doing some traveling. I just recently retired. And we bought a motorhome. Okay, this slide is of our radio club emergency communication trailer. And we set up every year and operate a special event station from the Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And that's very close to us here. And it's part of National Wildlife Refuge Week. And we always have a lot of fun doing that. Our club members come out and we use the trailer. And we transmit from the Federal Wildlife Reserve site. We have to get permission every year to do that. And it's a blast. We've talked to people all over the place from out there and really have a good time doing it. There should be another picture of myself and our club president, Ryan, KB9OWD. He's a contester, goes to Dayton. And I know Valerie in D9L knows him, has known him for a long time, and we're there operating in the trailer. And we always have a blast doing that. I guess the next, that's what my wife and I will be calling home here, probably about the middle of the summer. We're setting things up and we're cleaning out our house and we're going to be selling that. We were going to downsize anyway. We decided, nope, we'll just do our traveling that we've always wanted to do and never been able to. So that's we're going to head out for that. And this was at Field Day this last June. And we've got a 33-foot telescoping vertical mast from MSJ on the back there. And then you can see the ladder line going up. I got a G5 RV up in the trees out there at one of our local county parks. Our club goes out there every year. We reserve a block of campsites, and we have a good time. We probably do as much fooling around and chatting around as we do operating, but we always have a good time with it anyway.
Okay.
And then to go along with that, then we had some revisions done to the motorhome, and this is a desk, custom desk we had built and installed, and this is my to-go box, I guess you could call it, and it's sitting on the desk, and so it makes a nice operating position inside the motorhome, and so we'll plan on doing that. This is the front of it, and I've got the inside, I've got a ICOM 7300, IC7300 there at the bottom. And then the Heil parametric receive audio system in the center there. And that's it's hooked to the 7300. It does a nice job, the 7300 does, but you put that equalizer system on it from Heil and it's a whole nother level. And it really helps. And then above that is a VHF UHF ICOM 208H. And along with a signal link along with it there. And then the inside there's a 12 volt, about a 25 amp switching power supply. And so that when we go to travel, this can sit on the desk. And here's the back view that shows the components from the back. The power supply has a fan built in, so it's able to mount it sideways in there and allow the room on the center shelf for the parametric receive audio system. And then when we're ready to travel, I can just snap the covers on the front and back, and then there's storage under the desk and set it down in there. One of the things that I was worried about was when we go to travel that we could I'd have to set up radio equipment a piece at a time and then take it all down a piece at a time and put it away. And this makes it just so much easier. Everything is all enclosed. I've got the unit here. Inside or included with it was an LED light
bar. Oh, look at that. Cool.
So if you're operating, that's handy. Like a field day, you want to operate from a picnic table outside. You got light there in front of you when the sun goes down. And then it has a fuse for each of the radios, a fuse for, there's a cigarette lighter type adapter, and then also a power poles fuses for each one of those, and speakers built in, and only use the one on the VHF, UHF. The other one radio goes through the Heil system out the speaker for that, and that does an awesome job.
That whole system is really great, Dennis. I wondered, how did you come up with the idea? I know you want to carry it around, and that's a good idea. What did you do for the case? Was that something you built, or was that one of the production cases? Where'd that case come from? It's really cool.
I actually ran across that in 2017 at Dayton, and actually it was a company called iPortable, and DX Engineering sells these cases now too, and it is pre-wired with the fuses and some of the internal stuff. The light bar comes with it, and it was right across the aisle from the Heil sound booth, and I looked at it in 2017.
I figured that was, it kind of looked like it, so I wanted you to say that if that was it. And that's a really neat system, and DX Engineering have those, and you can do just all kinds of things. But it's got the bases into it as far as the power and the light. That's really great. Well, you've done a marvelous job, and I'm just really proud of what you did, and I know that the parametric receive audio system is of great help when you're trying to dig things out. So really, really nice. So I'm watching all this on the monitor. You did a marvelous job. How long did it take you to go from start to finish?
Oh, I didn't work on it 100% steady, but probably 3 or 4 weeks to put it all together. Oh. I had it done after we got back from Dayton. I started working on it, and I had it done pretty much. And it was usable for field day, and that's when I really got to put the equalizer system to the test, and big that's, difference.
And I heard from a user here not too long ago. They had one of the PRASs at their field day, and they used a very interesting thing on the front panel. You know, there's a receive out. And they hooked a guitar amp to it. They had a Fender guitar amp, so that all of the people, the press and the moms and dads and all of the visitors that are not hams, they can hear both sides of the conversation by using that. And I'm sure that you will be able to do that in some of your setups. So I really congratulate you, and I especially liked it that you were able to show us tonight and the nice pictures. So keep us informed. Come back and tell us some other things that you've done with it, because I know you're going to be doing something else with it. It really is quite neat. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, it's really good to have Dennis on. And it's just, I say it all the time, I love people that think. I really do. Just like the guy that I was telling you, I took the Fender guitar amp. I mean, I designed it. I never thought about it for doing that. I did it for recording. And here's somebody that says, hey, look what we can do with it. There's all kinds of things you can do if you just think. This is the hobby to think in, let me tell you. And here's another guy that really thinks, and that's George. George, how you doing? You been climbing towers or playing with 25,000-volt power supply? What are you doing today, George? Happy Halloween.
Oh, happy Halloween, Bob. And I've been out at the transmitter site, and actually at the end of my video tonight, you'll see a good reason that I'm glad I wasn't climbing the tower. But, last week I showed a tube on here that was only 2 months old that had failed. Well, so this week I changed that out, and I made a little video here. You know, when you're working on a transmitter with really high voltage in there, you need to pay attention. So I don't do a lot of videoing or a lot, because it's just not safe, but I do shoot a little bit every now and then, just one little section at a time, and maybe eventually we'll get through the through a whole transmitter there. But tonight we're gonna change it to you, but mostly we're going to talk about the filament voltage and how critical that is.
This week on Smoke and Solder, for Halloween, it's Tales from the Transmitter Site. Looking up under the final tube cavity, that transformer is a filament transformer, and those big cables that look like welding leads are actually to the filaments because it draws so much current. So maintaining filament voltage is very important with these big broadcast tubes.
We use a precision instrument here for measuring, like this Fluke True RMS voltmeter. We want to be certain that we're running exactly the right voltage to those filaments to get maximum life out of them. Some of the instruments we use at a transmitter site are highly specialized, like this custom-made bicycle mirror on the end of a stick. Sometimes that's the only way to see what you gotta see.
This can get kind of noisy. I've got my earplugs on. I've got my hair in my eyes.
And since the filament voltage is so critical to getting maximum life out of a tube, when we measure it right there at the base of the tube. So we're seeing the exact voltage that the tube is seeing. This is how we actually control the filament voltage. That power rheostat there is used on the primary of the filament transformer. It controls voltage to it, and it's motor driven, and that's run by an automatic circuit that adjusts it for the proper voltage. If you look up under here, there's a couple of micro switches of the lever type mounted down there. Those are the limit switches. The rheostat can't be turned except during a certain range there, so we don't exceed the maximum or minimum filament voltage permissible with this tube. There's a control card that actually runs this. And you'll notice I've run up against one of those limit switches there. That's because the spare tube I was using in here is weak, and I needed maximum filament voltage to get as much power as I could out of it. Let's take a look at some of the power supply components. You know, we usually have a rectifier stack to rectify our high voltage down to use with the tube. Well, right here are our three high voltage rectifier stacks for our plate voltage. Those run just under 9 kilovolts. And here's a three-phase transformer that supplies that voltage. To the right of that, and much smaller, is our screen voltage supply. That's closer to 700 volts there, and that is three-phase as well. If we look around front here, there's a couple of chokes. The one in the front right here is the screen supply choke. Helps filter out the ripples from the AC on it. And the one in the rear back there is the choke for the plate supply. Filter capacitor, 20 microfarads at 10 kilovolts. Behind this little panel right here is the card cage, and this is where a lot of the smaller circuit boards and control circuitry of the transmitter are. These three cards over here are gating cards for the high voltage supply. We won't talk about that today, but maybe in a future episode. Over here on the right side, there's one card that has all the calibrations for the meters, a control circuitry card for the transmitter, and a filament regulator card. That one card is strictly to control the filaments. That's how important it is. And we adjust that. Right now, I've got it in manual position because I've manually turned up my spare tube for maximum filament voltage. We'll put it back on auto once we've got things set up and I've calibrated it. So let's put a little filament voltage on this tube and see if we can adjust it for the rated 6.3 volts true RMS, which it needs to run at for the first 200 hours. Then after that, we can back the voltage down some to get maximum life out of that tube. Now, I've got a meter here on the front that will show filament voltage. Of course, we'll be using that Fluke to get the actual reading. Now, here's something that you won't see often at an FM transmitter site. I'm on television. That's actually an old exciter that's mounted there. That's a backup. It's no longer used, and that's just my reflection in it. We're going to turn on the transmitter now. For the first 200 hours of its life, it's a good idea to run these broadcast tubes at the rated filament voltage with no screen voltage or plate voltage on it. We don't put it under a load. We're just cooking in the filaments. We'll turn on that filament button when we're ready, but we want to make sure that the plate voltage is turned off. As soon as I turn on the filament voltage, I want to look and make sure that we're running at the rated 6.3 volts. Of course, I'll trust my Fluke True RMS meter down here for that. Here we go. Turn on the filaments. You can hear the blower come up to speed. And we look. Yeah, we're running a little bit high because that old tube, I had to run it a little higher to get enough emissions out of it. But we'll quickly back it down and work as fast as we can to get it to 6.3 volts using those buttons there to control that motor and rheostat that we saw in the back. A little work, and I can eventually get it to about 6.31. Close enough. This tube has got to stay cool, and there's an incredible amount of air that's pushed through that cavity with a blower underneath. And this cabinet right here is pressure interlocked. I need to get my meter leads out. When I open the door here below the tube socket, an air sensor in there will notice a pressure drop, and it will shut off the high voltage. In this case, the high voltage is not on. And it'll also shut off the filament voltage to keep from damaging the tube. And I'll quickly jerk my meter leads out of there because I'm through with that meter. As soon as I close the door, the filament voltage is back up. And now that I've set that exactly to 6.3 volts, what does the meter on the front of the transmitter say? It's not quite 6.3, it's more like 6.15. So that's why it's important that we use a good calibrated meter when making this adjustment, because that's highly critical to the lifetime of the tube. Now in the future, we'll look at some more items in the transmitter. Oh, there's one scary thing since it's Halloween. You see those little black things flying around that tower there? That's another good reason that I need to stay on the ground and not work on the tower. Those are wasps. I don't know why they like flying around an aviation orange tower. And you really couldn't see them so well in that shot, but they were just swarming all over that tower. And I've seen that at various times. I don't know why they like it so much, but you'll see them on up. I've seen them, you know, better than 100 feet before. So that's my filament tell from the transmitter tonight. And I edited that this morning. I was running a little late getting that together. And I noticed maybe I dropped out something in there. When I showed, I turned off the screen voltage and the plate voltage breakers over there. What I wanted to do is the first 30 minutes, I just wanted to season the filament. I just wanted to run filament voltage on it without a load. And I think maybe that part of the audio got cut out there. If I didn't say that, that's why I had those two off, because I didn't want to accidentally put screen and plate voltage on it and until I had cooked filaments just a little while. Well, you know, last week I asked a question kind of related to what we talked about tonight. What is the rated filament voltage of a 4CX15000A tube? And I didn't show you the tube tonight. We saw a photo of it last week, or the old one anyway. But I had a winner here. This came from Alvin Austin VE5XAM in Saskatoon. And he said the filament voltage of the iMac 4CX15000A tetroid tube is 6.3 volts at a whopping 160 amps. That's why it had those big jumper cable-sized cables, only, you know, a few inches long, running from the filament transformer there up to the tube socket. He said, interestingly, you know, the specs say that it's AC voltage that you'd want to use for the filaments. And I'm trying to summarize here. The thorinated tungsten filaments generally use AC voltage filament. And and a center tap on the transformer, that gives you the cathode DC return. So there you go. Congratulations, Alvin. We'll be sending you a copy of Gary Drash, K1DJT's great book, Ham Radio is alive and well. Find out what an old timer learned when he got back into the hobby after a long time. And he kind of brings us up to date on some of the new technology and some great things he learned about the hobby on the way back in. For next week, I've got another question here. And, we're going to give you one of Gordo's study guides, either the general class or the extra class license guide. I've got a question out of here that Gordo flagged just for our contest here. Which of the following might be useful in reducing RF interference to audio frequency devices? Is it a bypass inductor, a bypass capacitor, forward bias diode, or reverse bias diode? Which might be useful in reducing RF interference to audio frequency devices? If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might be the lucky winner of one of Gordo's study guides. Now, one other thing I want to mention before I go here tonight, we've been talking with Randy, K7AGE, and we're working on a new segment here, and I hope you guys will support it. It's going to be Show Us Your Project, and we'd like to see photos from you. No videos, but photos of what you've been building, soldering, wrenching, or drilling, or more or less, you know, projects that you've got in the works. And if you'd like to share your photos of your projects with us, well, send those to Randy, and he's going to edit them together into a video as he gets enough in. Send them to k7age@outlook.com. And Randy will put us together some videos and show us what everybody's been up to. Well, I'm going to drop out at this time, so I'm going to say 7-3 to everyone. Have a happy Halloween. I've got some more trick-or-treating to do myself. And I'm going to leave you with Don Wilbanks to maybe make your mortgage a little bit less scary.
Boy, don't we need that. Mortgages are kind of scary, but you know, it's one of those things you got to have. And this episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Let's talk about buying a home for a second. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. And it causes a lot of anxiety with the general public. Our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process, and it's pretty simple. You answer a few simple questions, they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval, and then Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval. That gives you the strength of a cash buyer. Now, once you're verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. And first, they'll lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. And now here's the best part. If the rates go up, your rates stay the same. But if the rates go down, your rate also drops. So either way, you're a winner. It's the kind of thinking you would expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. And Rocket Mortgage, we thank you and Quicken Loans for your support of Ham Nation. Back over to you, Bob, in your big old pants.
I stole some candy from Sarah's bag that she'd been answering the front door here. I love M&Ms, peanut M&Ms, yes. Well, I want to amplify one thing before we get to talk to Amanda. Be sure and listen up and do something about this new segment. And we want you to send pictures, not video, pictures of your segment. You may have of the project. You might have 5 or 6 different pictures. We don't care. Randy's going to make a whole collage of these. So I think it'll be fun because I know a lot of you are doing things and we want to hear and we want to see what you're doing. So get that to us and we'll have some more things to discuss and talk about here on good old Ham Nation. But we're going to slide out to Colorado. This could be interesting and see what Miss Amanda has. Hi, Amanda. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everybody. Boo. I want to let you guys know my front door is still open because I did not get nearly as many trick-or-treaters as I expected. So if you hear my dogs going crazy, I've got to get up and give those kids candy because I can't keep it all. So just fill in if I have to disappear for a second. But I don't think that's going to happen. So happy Halloween, everyone. Bob, love the costume. And also really super sweet to see Sarah on at the beginning of the show. She's looking beautiful. I just have to say that myself.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is a very important question, by the way. And this we could base the whole show off of this alone. Some people said dark chocolate in the chat room. And I say milk chocolate. So we'll go around the table here. What's your preference? Bob, you first.
Oh, it has to be dark. Hershey's dark. I don't like some of the European dark. They're too tart. But I love Hershey's chocolate. It's wonderful. And so is the new dark chocolate M&M peanuts. Yes. Yeah.
Amanda, I'll take any chocolate. Any chocolate. Make it happen.
Yes. Okay, that's a win, I say, for me. Don, what about you?
Depends on the mood and what I feel like. I like them both equally. Although it's doesn't Reese's peanut butter cup have a new dark chocolate? I didn't care for that. I didn't care for that much. I'm a purist when it comes to my Reese's, but I'm a big dark chocolate fan as well, but sometimes, man, there's just something about a nice high quality milk chocolate, like the little Dove bars. Oh, I love the little Dove.
Yes. I am a milk chocolate fan. I admit it. And I'm going to give you guys a significant fact here. Everyone says European chocolate is better, but if you actually look at their ingredients, European chocolate is allowed to put vegetable oil into their ingredients. So they can put up to 5% vegetable oil in it. Whereas the United States does not allow you to say that it's milk chocolate with anything other than milk and chocolate and sugar.
Wow.
Just want to let you know that.
Ooh. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's super fantastic. All right. I do actually have some questions. I'll send this one to you, George. You like to work with oscilloscopes, right?
George isn't on anymore.
Oh, okay. Gordo, you work with oscilloscopes as well. Okay. Pierre wants to know if it will damage his Regal oscilloscope if he connects his HT or HF rig directly to it on low power. Does he absolutely need to get an attenuator?
I would suggest inductively coupling it. In other words, without actually making contact with that great scope, because even on low power, some transceivers will have a spike that's up to 50 watts output, even in the 1 watt scale of the transceiver setting. So I always inductively hook it up or capacitively, whichever. In other words, I never go direct. I have one antenna next to the other one, and I keep them, maybe 6 inches to 8 inches apart. And I have not blown up my Regal scope yet, but I would never, ever, ever suggest hooking directly into it, even with an attenuator, because of that initial about 10 millisecond spike that some HF transceivers have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bob, did you want to add to that?
No, ditto. Yeah, you never want to connect the direct output of your RF transmitter into a scope. You'll have some real disasters. It's too easy to do it right. Just sometimes I just take some wire and wrap it around and make a coil of my own, and it works fine. But don't ever plug it in directly.
Nope.
Good lessons to know. All right. The other question I had was, are there still hams out there in Florida due to Hurricane Michael? I think, Don, you basically answered that. They've pretty much been called down.
I think they have. From what I heard in the Newsline report, most of them have been called down. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are still some local hams that are out there that are doing their part for the recovery. But I think that most of those guys that went out and deployed, I think that they've all been released.
Uh-huh. I believe that as well. And I had mentioned with my interview with Carl last week about how you needed to have your NIMS certifications. And I did get a question via email and also on Facebook, the Ham Nation Facebook page. Hey, you were talking about NIMS. What is that and how do I get it? Well, you actually get those FEMA certifications through the FEMA website. And you look for ICS 100, 200, 700, and 800. And they're online courses that you can take. And you download the certification, you save it, because they don't save it for you. So make sure you always download it and put it on a flash drive at least. And that's how you can verify with the served agencies that you go and assist with that you have those certifications. So make sure you do that.
And good point, Amanda. And at the PacificCon, Mike Corey explained in detail how the NIMS certification is going to play such an important part in the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, a registered operation of the American Radio Relay League. And we're all impressed. It's going to be a job for all of us to get the right certifications, 100, 200, 700, and 800, plus for leadership, 300 and 400. But there may be classes because FEMA does authorize specific instructors who have been super trained to give us training in a 1 or a 2 day class. Probably a fee involved, but believe me, I like the classroom setting because it's a great way to learn the new technology that FEMA wants us all to know to be good ARES emergency responders. Amanda, back to scare you.
I am scary. I want to talk about that a little bit. ARES is actually evolving, and the ARRL is calling it ARES Connect. And this is really important, all of you ARES people out there. And I look forward to talking to this more as it evolves. They're basically putting levels or tiers of what kind of participation that you have based on your NIMS certifications. And yes, if you're an emergency coordinator of some sort, they're going to expect you to have 300 or 400 under your belt. And those of you that know what I'm talking about, you've probably already done it. Those of you that don't, again, we're gonna teach you about that. So I look forward to, oh, and my doorbell's ringing. If you guys can cover just a second, I have to give out treats.
All right, Amanda.
Oh, my goodness. That's so cool. If any of you missed Amanda's interview last week, go find it. It's really good. She did a great job. Lots of information there. So you want to go take a listen to last week's program where she interviewed. It was really, really good. And we're getting some wonderful things here on Ham Nation. We're so excited about what's going to be coming up in the next year. We got some new segments. And we're going to be trying to bring you even more than we have the past 6 years or so. And very excited about things that are happening. And Gordo, do you have any parting shots here as we get to go outside and collect candy? Or yeah,
no, we're actually giving out candy. We have a unique bubble within a smoke, or no, it's smoke within a bubble machine, and the kids just go nuts on it. Probably creates a lot of RFI, but, you know, I'm not on the air right now, so the other hams in the area will have to put up with it. But Halloween is fun, and we hope all of you out here on Ham Nation just have a great Halloween evening, recovering now except for the West Coast and maybe those coming soon to Hawaii banging on your door. Happy Halloween to all of you, and Bob and Sarah, great outfits, all of our team.
Thank you very much.
I loved the costumes, and I still have handfuls of candy. These four little girls were all dressed as minions that just came to the door. I was just like barreling it into their buckets, and I'm sure their parents are like, But let me announce the Nets tonight that I know of. We have D-Star and 14 Charlie. We have DMR on TAC 311. And you know what, you guys? I didn't see an announcement for the 40-meter, 80-meter net. Did anyone else get that while I eat a peppermint patty?
I did not. Hopefully someone can pop it into the chat room real quick while we're wrapping things up. I did not see net frequencies tonight. But Just look on, where we normally have those. That'd be the best.
Yeah, 7192.
7192? Okay, there we go. Yeah, okay, there we go.
This is so delicious.
I'm the only one not eating on the show tonight. What's wrong with that?
That's excellent.
I'm heading back to Pleasant Hope in the morning. I'll be there for at least a week, and I'll be on the air a lot. So mostly on 160, but a lot of 75 and 40. So yeah, look for me or send me an email and say, hey, get on 7230 or whatever, and we'll meet up. Serious. And the last thing, if you have a club, you need to email all of us individually, because we all do programs for your clubs.
We do.
And it's really inviting to your club. You're going to get more members to come to a meeting, and that gives you a little bit more incentive to have special meetings, because sometimes meetings get a little tiresome. And I guarantee you that you have Gordo come in there, we'll crank it up. But we all do them individually because we all have different thoughts and different things. Your club can have us. All you got to have is a Skype laptop and plug it in. That's all you need. You don't need giant things. Just let us know you're there, and we'll be at your club meeting. Right, Gordo?
That's right. We love Skyping to clubs. Give us about a month advance notice, because I'm doing a club or two a week all over the country. And it's exciting because I'm not just yakking. I'm also listening to what the clubs have to say about the ARES in their area, the training that's going on. And as Amanda will tell you, it is so important that we train up, have the proper credentials, and that way we're going to serve our community. Thanks, Amanda, for keeping us on touch with that. So, Bob, back to you, and I've got people pounding on the door wanting more bubbles and fog machine action. So see you later from Gordo and Susie, WB6NOA. Happy Halloween.
Okay. Don, get it all together down there, and we'll see what's happening in your part of the world, and keep your old trance on the road. Keep your tires inflated. You know, all the stuff you do to your car, right, Don?
Yeah, we have the local club has a car club, or rather a car show this weekend, as a matter of fact, with the Picayune Street Fair. I live in the town of Picayune, Mississippi, and there's a spring and a fall street fair, and our club goes out and does an open car show. We'll have 200-300 cars, and so we're doing that Saturday morning, and then going to a wine tasting Saturday night, and probably not much on Sunday.
All right. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for watching, and we'll try to be in a little different attire for next week.
Speak for yourself.
I had fun. I know you all had fun. Thanks to Sarah for doctoring me up, and the use of her dad's. It's got to be 60, 65-year-old uniform, and it's still great. He was a rep, a sales rep for Lee Jeans, and that's what this is all about. 7-3. We're going to see you right back here next week or on the air. Bye-bye for now.